last week's verse, chapter 5, verse number 7, which we went through, Krishna gave us the steps on the spiritual path. Basically, we all start our lives mainly as a bogey, what is known as a bogey. What is a bogey? What is a bogey? A bogey is one who lives life dictated by the mind and the senses. Therefore, one who is chasing the world for all kinds of sense, pleasures and enjoyments. But Krishna says, if you turn to the spiritual path, maybe sometime it is due to your past karma, some good karmas you have, there arises in you that you want to change the direction of your life. So in verse number 7, Krishna says, first become a yogi. What is a yogi? A yogi is one who practices on the path of karma yoga. When all actions are done with the right attitude, then you become karma yoga. So all actions are practiced with the attitude of karma yoga. And then from that karma yoga, when you are called a yogi, then you purify the mind, you then acquire knowledge and become what is known as a jnani through the process of jnana yoga. So it is a very systematic approach to the spiritual path. How should one turn away from the world, from a bogi, become a yogi, from a yogi, become a jnani? And this is all possible to achieve even while we remain as householders. You must remember this point very well. Because we should not think that we cannot become a jnani as long as we remain a householder. But Krishna says no, it is possible. It depends on you, how you develop yourself spiritually. Now, what happens when one becomes a jnani? In verse number 7, he says, when that knowledge, you have acquired that knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of Atma Jnana, the knowledge of your real self. When you have absorbed that knowledge and understood that you are not this body, mind, consciousness, but you are the higher self, the witness consciousness, then he says in verse 7, third line, Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma. Sarva Bhuta meaning all the creation, Sarva is all, Bhuta means the whole creation. That Atma that you see in the whole creation is no different than the Atma that you see within yourself. Therefore, you see the oneness in creation. You do not see a person because of his body, because of his shape or size or color or religion, etc. You see beyond that. You only see that oneness in creation. When you identify with everybody in creation, then what happens? How do you live your life? How do you transact with the world? And that Krishna explains so beautifully in this next two verses, 8 and 9. How does a jnani, equipped with this knowledge, while living in the world, doing all your responsibilities and duties, how do you live in this world? What is the attitude or what is the mindset of such a person, a jnani? And these two verses are one of the most famous verses in the Gita. Ramakrishna Paramahansa continuously comments on these two verses. And what a powerful, impactful statement this verse makes. The very first line itself in verse number 8, the first line says, naiva kimchit karomi iti. This is how a jnani looks upon life, looks upon all the transactions of life. Karomi means whatever you are doing, karomi, all the actions that you do, naiva, I do nothing, kimchit at all. This jnani says, while doing all actions, this jnani's attitude is, I do nothing at all. What a dynamic statement. If you look at it, it is totally in contrast to what we have been saying all our lives. What do we say every day of our lives? Continuously we have been saying what? I did this, I went there, I helped this person, because of me only this project was a success. You know, if I was not there, this would have been a failure. I only did all this. And this person, the realized person says, I do nothing at all. Totally, completely opposite. Now, if you look at a simple example, supposing you belong to a temple and the temple needs to do a lot of renovations. The building is old, okay? Building is old, a lot of money needs to be collected, renovations need to be done, and you take it upon yourself because nobody else wants to do it, right? It's a thankless job. So you take it upon yourself, you sacrifice your time, effort, you go and get all the money, you go and collect the donations, you get the contractors together, you get the building renovated, 2-3 years of your life you sacrifice, and now the temple is beautifully renovated, there is opening ceremony, and everybody knows that you are the person instrumental in doing all this work, and they come and tell you, brother, what a wonderful job you've done. And if you are a humble person, truly humble person, a God-conscious person, what do you say?
I did nothing
at all. It is God acting through this equipment, this instrument, did all the action. Now, what happens when you make that statement, when you say, and you mean it, I do nothing or I did nothing at all, what happens when you make such a statement?
Humility.
Humility is there. What else?
Self-realization.
God consciousness is there. God, okay. Self-realization. What else?
Ego
is totally absent, isn't it? There is no more ego at all. Right? There is no place for ego. When genuinely you say, I did nothing at all. I am just an instrument in the hands of God. So such is the thinking of such a person. And yet, if you think about it, everything I did, isn't it? I used my intellect to think how to collect this money. I used my emotional mind how to appeal to people to give donation. I had to use my words to convince people to give money, right? I had to use my physical body to go to different places and collect. Everything I did, my mind was working, my intellect was working, my body was working, my speech was working, yet what I say? I did nothing at all. So who is this I? Who is this I? Is the Atman, the consciousness. When you identify with that consciousness, you say, I did nothing at all. It is the body which is functioning as an instrument of God. There is no question of ego. So same thing here, Krishna says, naiva kimchit karomiti. If we can just keep this one phrase in our mind, naiva kimchit karomiti, I do nothing at all, while doing all your actions, can you imagine there is no place for ego in your life? There is only place for God in your life. And yet Krishna says, while this person says, naiva kimchit karomiti, what is happening? All the organs are functioning. The whole body is functioning by its own very nature. And he lists various functions of the body which are going on automatically by their own nature. What are the actions? If you look at the third line verse, Pashyan, seeing. Eyes are seeing. That is the nature of the eyes. They will always be attracted to some form, some shape, some size, some color. And then what else? Srivan. Srivan is hearing. Your ears are constantly attracted to sound, hearing. Pashan, Srivan, Sprashan. Sprashan means touching. Touching, the sense of touch by your skin, etc. And then what else? Jigran. Jigran is smelling. Your nose is functioning. By its very nature, it is attracted to good smell and it is repelled by foul smell. And also asnan. Asnan means tasting or eating. Either or, the tongue has taste and it also eats also. And these five collectively, Pashan, Sravan, Sprashan, Jigran, Asnan, these five collectively are called in Sanskrit as Jnana Indriyas. They are known as your senses of knowledge, of perception. Because without these five senses, you will not be able to contact or perceive the world. Any one sense which is not working, you will have one less perception. If you are unable to hear, you do not have any perception of sound. These five, therefore, are called as Jnana Indriyas or organs of knowledge or perception. Okay? And then he goes on to list other functioning organs, and what are they? Gachan. Gachan means your legs for walking, for movement. Your legs are functioning. Swapan. Swapan is sleeping. Even when you are sleeping, also the body is functioning. The respiratory function is going on, blood circulation is going on, breathing is going on. Even in sleeping, there is activity. The body is, without your conscious, without your knowledge also, the body is functioning when you are sleeping. So that is, what is that? Swapan, sleeping. Swasan, swasan is breathing. That is also a natural function of the body. Swasan. And in the next verse 9, he carries on giving some more functions of the body. Pralapan. Pralapan means speaking. Speaking. Okay. Earlier, the tongue had one function called taste. This one, the tongue also has another function to speak. Okay. Voice or speaking. Visrajan. Visrajan means the body has a function to expel waste products, excretion, waste products. Then we have Grihnan. Grihnan is grasping by the hands. Hence, the, by nature, they are used to hold things, to grasp things. And even he goes to the extent of saying Unmisan and Nimmisan, the opening and closing of the eyes, the blinking of the eyes. All this is, all these actions will continue. And do you say, do you ever make a statement when the body is functioning, do you say, do you know today how many times my eyes blinked open and shut? Do you know how many times I breathed in and out? You don't. You take it as a natural function of the body. So similarly, your mind also is functioning according to nature. It is an emotional mind. It functions according to its own nature. The intellect also functions according to its own nature. It is acquiring knowledge. And all the bodily functions are moving on. But who do you identify with? You don't identify with the functions of the body. You identify with the higher self. And therefore, you say what? I do nothing at all. There is no more place for ego at all. Through your very basic function, whatever actions that you are doing in your life, understand this, you are actually not doing. Then who is functioning? The body is functioning, mind is functioning, intellect is functioning due to what? Why is the body functioning, the mind functioning, the intellect functioning? If you say I do nothing at all and the body is only matter, then what is driving the body? What made you come here? Gunas. It is a gunas which are dictating how your mind thinks, how your intellect thinks, functions, how your body functions. The gunas are the one which are responsible for driving the body. So we must understand, therefore, where are the you remember last time I drew the chart for you. remember the three bodies that we have. That is the gross body. The gross body, which is called Stula Sharira. Then you have the subtle body, which is known as Sukshma Sharira. And then you have the causal body, which is known as Karana Sharira. So gross body is what we can experience. You can see me, I can see you. That is what we call gross body. What is the subtle body? What is the subtle body?
The mind.
The mind. What else?
The intellect.
The intellect and
ego.
Ego. So the subtle body is composed of mind, intellect and ego. And when we say subtle means you cannot see it. So here when we say mind, it does not mean brain. It means a very subtle component of your body that is emotional, that is also the thinking aspect of your mind. And what is causal body?
The high consciousness.
What is causal body? Causal body is all your vasanas. Okay? All your impressions, your imprints of all your past lives, everything is there. That's why people who are able to hypnotize you are able to make you tap into your past lives. They are all there. The imprints, the impressions of all your past lives are there. That's why it is called causal body. And why it is called causal body? Because all the actions that you do in this life, the imprints go into the causal body, and this is the cause of your next birth. That's why it's called the causal body. It is the determining factor in your next birth. Now, where is Atma therefore? Where is Atma? Right? So where is it? It is all pervading. Atma is consciousness, which has got nothing to do with the gross, subtle, causal body. Atma, the consciousness, is the all pervading consciousness. So when you say, I do nothing at all, and yet the causal, the subtle and gross and causal body are all acting, right? So who is this I who do nothing at all?
Atma.
So when you say I do nothing at all, you are looking at all the transactions of your life from this viewpoint, not from this viewpoint. And this is all nothing but made of matter. And therefore, where are the three gunas? Where are the three gunas? Huh? They are the gross body, they are the subtle body, they are also in the gross body. They are not in the Atma. The gunas are all in this matter. The three gunas are only in matter. They are not in Atma. So Atma provides the consciousness or the energy for the three bodies to function. The gunas will determine what you do. Whether you are sattvic, whether you do sattvic actions, rajasic actions or tamasic actions. Therefore, neither is the Atma responsible for your actions. It is the gunas actually which are responsible for your actions. Right? So this person says, I do nothing at all. It is the gunas which are naturally functioning. The body is functioning according to the gunas. And such a statement a jnani makes. Therefore, the important line to remember is, naiva kimchit karomiti. I do nothing at all. If we keep on remembering this space in our lives, in all the transactions that we do, there is no place for ego to flourish. Now, having said that, in the next three verses, 10, 11 and 12, Krishna will summarize what is Karma Yoga, who is a Karma Yogi. And then in verses 13 to 21, Krishna will summarize who is a Jnani. So what is the nature of a Karma Yogi is given in verses 10, 11, 12, the definition of Karma Yoga. And verses 13 to 21, Krishna will then explain to us who is a Jnani or how does a Jnani react or live in this world. Therefore, we come to verse number 10. Yes.
Could I just ask a very quick question?
Sure.
You know the definition that will be given of a Jnani here?
Mm-hmm.
In other religion and other scriptures, is their definition same here?
Other scriptures?
Like, for example, Sikhism. Is it same here? Jnani here and their Jnani. Is it the same?
A Jnani is one who is endowed with this knowledge. In Hinduism, we believe in the knowledge of the Atman, which is the same as Brahman. So if you look at other religions, they believe in that one God consciousness. So whoever accepts himself to be that supreme consciousness is a Jnani, basically. But I'm not sure how the other religions treat this concept of Brahman, whether they look upon God as different and ourselves as different, then that is not Jnani. Jnani means I am one with that supreme consciousness. Right? Okay? Yeah, the Father, the Son and the Holy Ghost. So there is a Trinity. But in this case, there is no Trinity. It's Advait. There is no difference at all. That is a Jnani who has realized that I am that supreme consciousness. Okay. Now, as we discussed earlier, first of all of us are bogies. That is, most of us live our lives according to the dictates of our senses and our emotional mind. Therefore, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to slowly turn to become yogis, from bogies to yogis? So here Krishna says that first of all, the attitude of Karma Yoga must be cultivated in all our actions. And what is the attitude of a Karma Yogi? What is the definition of Karma Yogi? What is the attitude of a Karma Yogi? First of all, before we surrender our actions, we must understand what is the law of karma. Before we surrender our actions, what is the law of karma? Every action, there is an equal reaction. Okay, what else? What is the law of karma that Krishna gave us in chapter 2? The very essence of Karma Yoga was given to us in chapter 2. You remember that very famous verse? No. Which verse is that in chapter 2? The very essence of Karma Yoga. That explains the law of karma also. Those who are not there can be excused. You remember? Huh? Verse 47, exactly. Karma nevadi karaste ma paleshu kadachana ma karma pala hetu bor ma te sangosya karmani. Chapter 2, verse 47. The very law of Karma Yoga, the essence of Karma Yoga, this is what the Karma Yogi has got to keep in mind. What is that attitude? That the law of karma governs all our lives. And what is that law of karma? He says, when it comes to action, Krishna says, you have a choice. You have a choice as a human being to choose the cause of your action. That means there is freedom to act. If you want to go left or you want to go right, you want to become a vegetarian or non-vegetarian, you have that choice of action. And this choice of action is based on, number one, using your intellect to choose the right course, because with choice comes a great responsibility. If I have a choice, then I should be very responsible to make the right choices in my life. If I make the wrong choices, I will end up suffering. So the choices are based on using your intellect, number one. Number two, it is based on what is known as free will. We have free will. Human beings have been given this capacity of free will, but it is up to us whether we use it or abuse it. So in the very first line he said, karman eva vikaraste. You have choice when it comes to choosing your course of action. But in the very next line he says what? Ma phaleshu kadachana. When it comes to the outcome or the result of your action, you have no choice. It is a choiceless situation. You can have a goal, but what actually happens is totally not in your control. Anything can happen. As a result of your action, the consequence, anything can happen. You have no choice. Now, knowing this as a karma yogi, that I have choice of action on the action, but I have no choice when it comes to result, what should I do? I know this. How do I accept? By? How do I accept? By surrendering. By surrendering that result to God. Because it is a law of karma and I am governed by the law of karma, who created the law of karma? God himself created the law of karma, and God cannot be unjust. Therefore, for every action, whatever reaction I'm getting is coming from the law of karma. The law of karma has been designed by Lord, and Lord can never be unjust. Whatever I'm getting is due to me, I will get it. Whether it is favorable or unfavorable, it is just. Therefore, I should surrender the results of my action. So here the same thing, here what Krishna is saying in this verse number 10, that Brahmanya Adaya Karmani. Brahmana Adaya Karmani means what? Karmani, your actions. Adaya, you offer all your actions to God. Every action that you do, when you say offer to God, what are you offering? When you pray, I can offer flowers, I can offer fruit, I can offer water. What does it mean by offering actions to God?
It means when you do the action, it's like now when you teach us, you're teaching us, so your mindset should be like, I'm teaching this because it's God's work. Like that.
Right.
So
right.
If I do my homework, I'm doing it for God,
right.
Not for myself.
It's a mental attitude. So what is it that you offer? In fact, what he says is in the very second line, Sangam Tyaktva. Without attachment. That is what you are offering. That means you have no worry or concern about the result of the action because you have already surrendered it to God. In fact, worry is the most significant sign of a person's devotion to God. Isn't it? The more you worry means what? The less faith you have in God. The less you worry means the more faith you have in God, because you have surrendered the result to God itself. So that worry factor is taken away already from you. So therefore, he says here, do your actions, surrender all the attachment to the result of the actions. That is what you are giving up. That is what you are offering to God, is the result of your action. That is in his hands to decide what to do. So whether the result is favorable or unfavorable, you surrender it to the hands of God. Sangam tyaktva karotiya. And yet he says karoti, do all your action. He is not telling you to abandon your action. Perform all your duties, perform all your results, mentally surrender all the results to God. Keeping in mind the law of karma, which is what? Just told you a law of karma, chapter 2 verse 47. I have freedom to act, but I have no freedom when it comes to choice of the result. That is the law of karma. We should keep this totally in our mind. We don't have absolute choice when it comes to result, but I have absolute choice when it comes to performing my duties and my actions also. So, Sangam Tektva Karotya. What happens when you have this attitude in your life? You are a karma yogi. What happens? He says, Lipyate Nasa Papena. Lipyate means you are untouched by papam, by sin. Again, what is this sin? What is this sin now? Such a person acting with this right attitude, surrendering the results in the hands of God, lipyate na sa papena. Sangam tyaktva, therefore, when you give up all your anxieties about what? Regarding the future. Give up all your anxieties regarding the future. What you get? If you give up all the anxieties regarding the future, peace of mind, calmness of mind. You plan for the future, but don't be anxious about the future. Have your plan and surrender the results to God. So this peace of mind, this calmness of mind, this is what he says, you won't get, you will get that calmness of mind, that peace of mind. So therefore, what is papam here? Papam is basically all the agitated mind. That is your papam. Papam here does not mean sins, you are freed from sins. What you are freed from is dukkham, from sorrow, from agitation, from disturbance, from all kinds of worry, anxiety. That is what is called papam. So papam here actually means dukkham, all kinds of worries in your mind. You will be completely free from this if you learn how to surrender the results into the hands of Lord. And therefore he gives a very beautiful example also. And that example he gives is Padma Patram. Patram means leaf of Padma, which is the lotus leaf. Ambasa means water, like a lotus leaf which is in water. And what is the uniqueness of this lotus leaf? As we know in our mythology, lotus is associated with lot of purity. It is a symbolism of purity. It is a symbolism of spiritual growth. And you can see that, which is that goddess that sits in the Lakshmi, that sits in the lotus leaf. And where else can you see this lotus? Another very famous depiction of this lotus.
When
Brahma comes out from the navel of Vishnu and Brahma sits in the lotus. So therefore we see, anyone, if you go to temple, you see the goddesses holding lotus leaf in their hands, lotus flower in their hand. And what is the uniqueness of the lotus? Why particularly lotus has been chosen as a symbol of purity?
Rose is very pure.
Exactly. The uniqueness about the lotus, So the uniqueness about the lotus, you can read this up on the internet, it grows out from the water itself. So it grows from the depths of all the dirty, muddy water, and it rises above the muddy water to face the sun. Number one. Number two, at night, it goes back into the water. If you read about the lotus flower, at night it retracts back into the water and in the morning it comes back out again. You see? So it immerses itself in the dirty water, but morning it comes out again. And it is born out of the dirty water itself. Yet it remains high above the water. The water does not affect the lotus flower. That is the uniqueness. That's why it is associated with purity, with spirituality, with spiritual growth. In fact, in some religions, they also associate a lotus with rebirth. Goes back into the water, comes back out again. Goes back, comes back out again. So there are many beautiful things associated with the lotus. And here also Krishna identifies that person, that jnani, who is immersed in the world, is in contact with the whole world, but remains totally untouched. That's why he gives that example. It is like how we say, boat is on the water, boat is in the water, or water is in the boat. Boat is in the water, or water should be in the boat. Which one is correct? Obviously, boat in the water, right? Now, what do we mean by this simple statement? When the boat is on the water, the river, the boat is in contact with the river, water, yet it does not allow the water to seep into the boat. If the water seeps into the boat, what happens? The boat sinks, right? So the boat is on the water, it is in contact with the water, does not allow the water to seep in, but it uses the water to guide itself to its destination. So if we use the same allegory, what is the boat? What is the water? Water is the world. Boat is our body, our mind, our consciousness. And there is a boatman. The boatman is who? The Atma. Right? Untouched, using the boat, the body, mind, consciousness. Therefore, the body, mind, consciousness is an equipment for me to use to guide myself through the world. While I'm in contact with the world, I must know how to use this body, mind, equipment. I must know how to use the world and reach my destination safely without allowing the water to come into the boat. Right? So the first thing is, before we even gain this knowledge that I'm Atman, very important. First thing a Karma Yogi says, I am an instrument in the hands of the Lord. I have not got this knowledge yet. I do not identify myself with Atman. I identify myself with this body-mind complex. I have not got that knowledge. So how do I live my life? I consider my body, my mind as an instrument in the hands of God. So that is the first step. Then as we go along, we acquire the knowledge that I am Atman and we believe in this knowledge, then what happens, you say? I do nothing at all. You see the transition? First you consider yourself the body-mind complex, but you say it is an instrument in the hands of God. Then when you acquire the knowledge, you say, I do nothing at all. You even don't even identify with the body, the mind, the intellect. So here Krishna says, such a person, Padma Patram Ivam Basa, he or she lives their life in contact with the world but does not get affected by the world. Okay, coming to the next verse, number 11. In the next verse, here 11, here Krishna identifies how one should perform action. And we have four options. In verse number 11. So he says, Kayena, your body is there. Kayena means body. Manasa, mind. Buddhaya, intellect. And the second line, Indriya, senses. Therefore, we have four equipments given to us. This is what is explaining to us how we can perform action. And we have a choice. There are some people who know how to use this physical body in the service of others. So, Kayena, one possibility is engage your body in doing selfless service, in doing seva. Kayena. And, okay, we'll come to that later. So, Kayena, that is one option. Use your body, engage your body constantly in seva, in the service of others. Then he says, Indriya. What do you do with your senses? If some of us then also can use our senses also to perform karma yoga. How do we use our senses to perform karma yoga? How do we use our senses? No, body is kayena. That is a body. Engaging the body in action. That is another one form of karma yoga. Another form he says, use your senses also.
No?
Right, exactly. Correct. Exactly. Speaking or singing bhajan, hearing about God, doing nama japa, reciting the names of the Lord, right? All these are engaging your senses, nama japa. Another very important thing is controlling your senses, having discipline over your senses, what you see, what you hear, etc. All this is also a form of karma yoga, using your senses. Therefore, one is body, one is senses, indriya, and the other, he says, manasa, manasa karma, with your mind. What do you do with your mind?
Have the right attitude.
Okay, can right attitude also, yes. What else? How do you engage your mind also in karma yoga? So all the equipments we have, you must only know how to use it the right way.
Mind must remain attached.
Unattached. Okay, what else? Fix your mind on God. So there's one thing, meditation also is one. There's meditation also that helps you to focus your mind on God. And meditation, many people make a very big mistake. They try to stop the mind completely in meditation. Steal the mind completely. Is it possible to steal the mind?
No.
And yet many people sit down in meditation and say, steal the mind, don't think of anything. And when you tell your mind not to think of anything, it will definitely think of something. Therefore, the first state of meditation is, bring a thought of your Ishta Devata in your mind. Sit down, close your eyes. But bring the thought of any God which you find favorable, hold that thought in your mind, that Ishta Devata, Ganesha, Krishna, whatever it is, or a thought of a light or whatever in your mind. So keep that mind occupied. You try to keep the mind still, it will run into different direction. So one of the most beautiful karma yoga of the mind besides meditation is called Manasa Puja. It is one of the most highest forms of puja, which means, you see, one is we chant, we do nama japa, we chant loudly. The more higher form of nama japa is, you don't chant loudly, you chant it in your mind, manas. So your mind keeps on reflecting that mantra. That is one form of also doing karma yoga with your mind. Another, which is called manasa puja, is when you invoke that deity in your mind, whichever is your Ishta Devata, and imagine you are offering flowers, or you are offering fruit, or you are offering water. That is called manasa puja. That same puja that you are doing physically, where you need to have the Ishta Devata in front of you, you have to sit in a temple, this manasa puja you can do anywhere and anytime. It's such a beautiful form of puja. Just invoking that Lord in your mind, and just imagine that you are offering that Lord some fruit, some water, some flowers. So that is also one form of manasa karma yoga, to engage your mind in mental activity, fix it on God. And the fourth equipment that you have is buddhi, and you should know what to do with it. Which is what you're doing right now, right? Basically studying the scriptures, reciting the scriptures, trying to understand the meaning of the words of the scriptures, all that is engaging your intellect on the path of karma yoga. So therefore, four equipments that you have, kayena, body, manasa, mind, indriya, senses, and buddhaya, which is your intellect. Any one or all four, you can choose one, or you can engage all four with the right spiritual practices. But, it's a big but. Big but. What is the but?
No attachment. To whatever you do.
No attachment, of course, is important. So, very important is, don't be attached. Which he repeats again, the same thing again there. Sangam tyaktva. You see the last line there?
Yeah.
So whatever, because many people do all this. You do seva, but what is your attitude to seva?
You must remember me.
No, you must thank me, you must remember me, you must congratulate me. So very important, you want to use your body, and then also prayers. Many people go and do prayers. But what do they ask for? whatever it is, long list of demands are there, isn't it? So here he is saying very clearly, do all this, engage all your organs, your mind, your body, your intellect, your senses, but sangam tyaktva, you must not be attached. Therefore, don't seek results from your actions. Sangam tyaktva. In fact, even if you look at Ravan, Ravan was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. He did all kinds of austerities, prayers, rituals in order to gain a lot of boons from Shiva. And as a result, he was strong, he was powerful, he had a lot of wealth. But what did he do with it? Did it help him to attain moksha?
No.
He abused it. So much so he abused it that he realized now he had no way to gain moksha. So you know what he did? He wanted moksha. He knew he had done too many atrocities already. There was only one way for him to get moksha. Huh? Rama to kill him. Because he heard from the sage that if God comes and kills you, you get instant moksha. Of course, you should not use that method. You should not learn, but that is the extreme method. But that's what he did. He kidnapped Sita so that Rama will come after him and engage in a fight with him. And he knew that he could not kill Rama because he asked Shiva for all the boons, that I not be killed by Deva, I not be killed by Asura, I cannot be killed by animal, but he forgot to ask for one boon. I cannot be killed by human. So, despite all the atrocities, he also needed to be killed in order to get liberation also. Therefore, here Sangam Tyaktva is a very important point for us to remember. When we engage our body, our mind, our senses, our intellect, we must be detached from the results of the action. And therefore, he says, kevalir. The word kevalir is very important here. Kevalir means only for the purpose of, you perform all these actions with only one objective in mind. What is that objective? Purification of mind. The word used there in the last line of verse number 11, Atma Sudaya. Here the word Atma means mind, Sudaya means purify the mind. So kevalir means only for the purpose of, a karma yogi will use his body, his mind, his senses, his intellect and do all the actions without attachment. Why? Because his goal is what? I am doing everything only for the purpose of purification of mind. I don't want anything else. I want to purify myself. That is the objective or goal of the karma yogi. And thus he says, yogina karma kurvanti. Perform, use this body, mind, senses, etc. Do all your actions without attachment. Keep one goal in mind, that your only goal is for purification. That's why only then you are called a karma yogi. Otherwise, what are you? If you perform all the actions, you cannot be called a karma yogi. If you do it for your selfish purposes, then you just become a karmi. A karmi. So from a karmi become a karma yogi. That is the message here. Have the right attitude. Kevale, very important word here, kevale. For Atma Sudaya. And therefore, the very important point also Krishna is making here, the purpose of performing karma yoga is only one. That is what? Purification of the mind. And that, what he is trying to tell you here, karma yoga won't give you moksha. It will give you purification of mind, it won't give you moksha. The very purpose of doing selfless action is to gain purification of mind. But the problem is, not everybody is interested in performing karma yoga for purification. So, in fact, Ramakrishna Paramahansa also gave a beautiful allegory to compare the four types of people who are in this world. And he used fishing as an allegory. Fishing. So he said, like there are four types of fishes in the sea, there are four types of spirit, there are four types of humans also. The first type of fish is, when he sees the net thrown in the river, in the sea, that fish is intelligent enough to see the danger of the net and the fish swims away. That's the first type of fish. Okay? The second type of fish is a bit too late, gets entangled in the nets, but manages to break free and get out of the nets. That's the second type of fish. The third type of fish is entangled in the nets, knows that it is entangled in the net, and is making every effort to try and break free. It has not broken free, but it is making every effort to break free of the net. And the fourth fish doesn't even know that it is trapped, is happily swimming in the net, not knowing that very soon it is going to meet its death. So like that, there are four individuals in this world. The first type who sees the danger of the net, meaning the world is nothing but a danger, I should not get entangled in it, I stay away from it, such a person is called what? Sthitapragna or sannyasi. One who stays away from the world. Sorry, it's called a jnani. Who stays away from the world, is very alert about the dangers of the world and goes on the spiritual path. It's called a jnani. The second type of person who gets entangled but manages to break out of the nets is called a He's free now. He's called a sannyasi. One who was entangled, realized the problems, broke out of the net, and now he's detached, is called a sannyasi. The third one is where most of us, all of us, majority of us fall in. Here, I'm talking about here. We are entangled in the net. We know that this is a danger. We are making full effort to break out of it. So we are all called karma yogis, the third type of fish. And the fourth type of fish, which does not exist in this room but outside there, does not know that it is entangled in this world, continues to be swimming in his own ignorance, and doesn't know that death is imminent, is the, just now what we call the bogi. Ramakrishna gave this explanation with the four type of fishes to compare with the four type of people also in this world. Now in verse number 12, he completes his discussion about karma yoga, who is a karma yogi. Then from verses 13 to 21, he will move and discuss about the nature of a jnani. Okay. Now, here in verse number 12. Okay, in verse number 12 here, he gives the nature of a karma yogi. He says, this karma yogi, which he identifies as a yuktaha. Yuktaha means one who is consistently on the path of karma yoga. This person, what is his benefit? In the second line you see, shantim apnoti naishtikim. Apnoti means he attains shanti. And this shanti is not just an ordinary type of shanti, because we also can get shanti from engaging in the world, isn't it? By buying various objects, by meeting different people also, you can get happiness and peace of mind. Therefore, he says this shanti is naishtikim. It is a, what we call an everlasting shanti. It is not a fleeting state of mind. You get some happiness, then you're not happy. Sometimes you're happy, sometimes you're not happy. But a yuktaha, one who is on the path of karma yoga, the type of shanti that he attains, is what we call naishtikim, right? And very important, why also this brings about such a kind of peace of mind? Because if you remember in chapter 3, when Krishna spoke about yajna, if you go back to chapter 3, verse number 10, page 63. Chapter 3, verse 10, page 63. Here Krishna said that why were human beings created? They were given a purpose. What is the purpose of your life? So he said human beings were created with the spirit of sacrifice, with the spirit of yajna. And what is this spirit of yajna, which Krishna explained in the other verses of chapter 3? Basically what he wanted to say is that we are continuously receiving from nature. Apart from the sun, the rain, the air that we breathe, what else do we receive from the world? What nature provides us is sun, rain and air that we breathe. What else do we receive from the world? Food. What else do you receive from the world?
Knowledge.
If you receive knowledge, what else?
Disappointment.
No, good things. What else do you receive from the world? Knowledge is there. What else? Huh? Compassion you receive from the world. Love you receive from the world, don't you? So we do receive a lot of good things also from the world. And therefore, what Krishna says here, when you receive all these things, don't keep it. You are to share. So you give back love, you give back compassion, you give back knowledge to the world. Why? Because Krishna says, yajna is like a cycle. Don't break the cycle. As you receive, you give. And when you give, you receive back. So, that means what he is trying to say, if you live your life by this attitude of yajna, that I have received and what I am doing is I am just giving back, he says, by this shall you multiply and by this sacrifice you will get the enjoyment that you seek. Meaning what? Meaning if you don't live a life of yajna, you will never find that eternal peace. Right? That is what he is telling you. If you live a life of yajna, you will definitely get that everlasting peace. But the reason why you are not getting that peace is because you are not living your life as a yajna. Therefore, you are not contributing to that cycle of yajna, giving and receiving. You have broken the chain of yajna. So that's why your mind is constantly in torment. You will never get that lasting peace. In fact, when we looked at this karma yogi, at the first stage, I consider my body as an instrument in the hands of God. When I go up to the higher stage, I consider myself as Atman, I say I do nothing at all. And then we look at the lives of saints and sages. What have they done? They surrender everything to God. They don't even care about their bodily needs also. Whether whatever food I get, whatever water I get, I surrender everything to God. And there's a lot of beautiful stories told about the sages and saints. The one beautiful story which is about Guru Nanak. You all know who is Guru Nanak? The founder of Sikhism. Right from the very young age, when he was a young adult, his mind was always lost in thoughts of God. He could not think of anything else. He had surrendered everything to God. His mind was totally immersed in thoughts of God. So much so that his parents got very worried. So you are a young man. You can't just sit there whole day just thinking about God, chanting the names of God. You got to go out and do something, man. Go out and get a job. At least be a responsible person. So he said, okay. He listened to his parents. He went out looking for a job. And finally he was hired by this farmer who was sowing what you call his grains. You know, wheat grains and all that. So the farmer had got a big harvest and he was in his godown. And he told Nanak that your job is to take this container and measure how much grains there are. So one cup, take another cup, put the grains inside, measure. Let me know how much grains there are in this godown. So Nanak started, he took the first cup, he filled it up and he started counting in Hindi. So ek, one, two, he filled up, do, teen, char, he went on like that, one, two, three, four. Finally he reached the number 13. 13. So 13 in Hindi means Tera. But Tera has got another meaning also. It means yours. And then because he was such a God conscious person, when he said Tera, he said, actually God, everything is yours only. What am I counting here? Right? Tera, everything is yours. Because the number 13 ignited him in again thoughts of God again. And he just sat there looking at everything. God, everything is yours. So the boss saw him like that, sitting there doing nothing. He said, son, he knew that Nanak was a very God-conscious person. He said, better you go back home because you can't work anymore. Now, we think, such a God-conscious person who couldn't do any work, whole mind was immersed in God, yet what is it that Nanak did not get? What is it that he did not have? Whatever food he wanted, whatever water he wanted, whatever shelter he wanted, whatever clothes he wanted, he had millions of devotees falling at his feet offering him whatever he wanted. He never asked for anything. He never sought anything. Yet, he had surrendered his whole life to God, and then it is nature to look back after you. When you have surrendered everything to nature, it is nature's responsibility to take care of you. So we see from this lives of saints and sages who have reached that level of total surrender, they do not worry about their needs anymore. It is nature that takes care of everything. There is one verse in chapter 9 that Krishna says, when you surrender everything to me, yoga shema vahamyaham. Yoga shema, the two very important words. Yoga means what I don't have. Krishna says, you see, all our actions that we do throughout our whole life is only for two reasons. What are the two reasons that you do all your actions for? Either you do action to attain something or to hold on to something, isn't it? If you bought a house, now you got a house, what do? To pay the bank, you have to work hard every day to earn money to pay the bank, just to hold on to your house, to hold on to your car, to hold on to everything, isn't it? Or either you are working to get something else which you don't have. So yoga shema is, yoga is what you don't have, Krishna says, I will make sure you get it. Shema is what you have, I will make sure that you hold on to it. So your yoga shema becomes my responsibility, Krishna says. But for that, it requires total surrender. Therefore, we have to slowly progress to that stage. From bogi to yogi, yogi to jnani, and then comes total surrender. So here also, coming back to our verse, here it says, chapter 5, verse number 12, shantim abnoti naishtikim. This kind of shanti is what we call the real shanti, that kind of peace that never goes away from your mind. And for who it is? It is for a yuktaha, one who is firm on the path of karma yoga. And again, he repeats the same word, karma phalam tyaktva, one who has renounced the fruits of your action, who has surrendered the fruits of your action. Therefore, one who is totally an instrument in the hands of the Lord. In fact, in chapter 11 also, verse 33, there's another very interesting line that Krishna speaks about. If you look at chapter 11, verse number 13, verse number 33, page number 216. If you look at the last line of verse 33, you see the word there, nimita matram bhava savya sachit. Nimitra matram bhava savya sachin. Savya sachin means left-handed archer. Because Arjuna had this ability to shoot the arrow using his left hand or his right hand also. He was ambidextrous. He could shoot from the left hand or he could shoot from the right hand. That's why he earned the title Savya sachin. So Krishna is telling him, Arjuna, fight this battle as what? Nimita matram bhava. You are an instrument in my hands. It does not matter whether you shoot the arrow from the left hand or whether you shoot the arrow from the right hand. What is important? Shooting from God's hand. Yes. So, surrender yourself as an instrument in my hand. Nimita matram bhava. We are all an instrument. If we have that attitude, Nimita matram bhava, I am but an instrument in the hands of God. So such a devotee, yuktaha, the attitude of a karma yogi is that everything is in the hands of God. So naishtikim, you get that constant everlasting peace. How? By karma phalam tyaktva. You have dropped your anxiety, you have dropped your concern for karma phalam. And therefore Krishna says, that is the nature of a yuktaha. Now he also contrasts that, if you look at the third line, with a yuktaha. So two types of people are being spoken about here. Yuktaha is one who follows the path of karma yoga, who surrendered all the results in the hands of God. Then you have ayuktaha. Ayuktaha is what? Is what we call a bogi, who thinks that all the actions I am doing, everything is for my needs and for my selfish purposes. Now, what is it that drives ayuktaha? What is it that drives the actions of ayuktaha? He says, kama karena. All the actions of a bogi, one who is a person who is driven by the senses, all your actions are driven by variety of desires. Kama means desires. So kama karena, karena means actions, are all driven by nothing but selfish desires. All kinds of kama, various kinds of desires. And such a person, Krishna says, is therefore phale sakto, is attached to the fruits of the actions. Now what do we mean by attached to the fruits of the action? The yuktaha, the karma yogi, is detached. So what do you mean by when you say a bogi, the one who does actions driven by desires, is attached to the fruits of the action? He enjoys, but how is he attached? So when you say attached, what do you mean by that? Okay, you don't want to give it up, but what else? Okay, one negative reaction is you keep on wanting more. What is the other negative reaction? The ayuktaha. See, when you are attached to the action, when you consider that I am doing this and driven by your desires, then the results are not in accordance with your expectation, results in what? Anxiety, worry, stress, etc. Right? So when you say you're bound to the results of your action, it means the results of the action affect the state of your mind. You are affected. Because why? You wanted that result. You wanted it so badly. You were totally attached to the result of the action. You expected that outcome. And because the outcome was not in your favor, therefore you get affected by the result. But if you have surrendered everything to the Lord, then whatever the outcome, it does not agitate you, it does not affect you. That's why you are not bound to the result of the action. So that is the difference between a yuktaha and a ayuktaha also. You are bound or attached to the results of your action. Okay? I think time to sum. Are there any questions? Otherwise we will come back next week and start on verse number 13. Yes.
Remember last time you gave us from chapter 1 to 3 the roles of Krishna? At first was Kshatriya,
yes.
Second was Guru, I think.
Yes.
Third was Dharmic leader. Why is fourth? We finished fourth.
In every chapter, Krishna plays a different role. So, I think I told you all what is on chapter 1, 2, and 3, and what is the role that he plays in chapter 4. What is the role that Krishna plays in chapter 4? In chapter 3 was the Guru. What is in chapter 4?
Chapter 3 is Dharmic leader.
What is in chapter 4? Chapter 4 is given in verse number 29. What is Krishna's role in chapter 4? He identifies himself as what? Bhoktaram yajna tapasam. I am in reality the enjoyer of sacrifice and austerities. Whatever austerities, whatever actions you perform, Krishna says, I am the one who is the enjoyer of all this. Ultimately, everything is nothing but God. So everything we are surrendering to God. So what is the role he plays here? Bhoktaram, yajna tapasam and sarva loka maheshwaram. He is the friend of Sarva Loka. Of the whole world, he is the Maheshwaram. He is the supreme lord and the friend of everybody. So what is the role that Krishna identifies himself in chapter 5? Sarva Loka Maheshwaram.
That's chapter 5.
Friend of everyone. Sarva Loka and the supreme lord and the friend of all beings. That is the role he plays in chapter 5. You want to know chapter 6, then Akandata. To come back again when we... Now, what I also plan to do is, when we finish chapter 6, probably by October, with the next session that we do will be a full question and answer session. So, it will give you some time for the next 2 to 3 months, if there are any... Because 6 chapters cover the first section of the Gita. So, once you have covered that, whatever doubt...